Adam Simmons, ladies and gentlemen. So you like that, huh? You first, honey. Well, we have reached the higher ground this morning. And it's a higher ground that exists in us by means of our understanding of the science of mind teaching. Now, the man who formulated the science of mind teaching, Dr. Ernest Holmes, once said these words, and it's the basis of my talk this morning. If spiritual things be true, it's not enough to declare that they are. We have to understand how they work and why. Then we'll be able to say, here it is. This is the way it works. You can use it, and so can I. This morning, Edward Brown gave a wonderful pre-service treatment, and in it he processed the idea of being blessed. And he gave us an affirmation that is used by a lot of religions, and it's, I am blessed, and he explained why. But I got to thinking in terms of my talk this morning that what really blesses us, well, we can be blessed by a lot of things, but what we're letting bless us this morning is our understanding of the way this principle that science of mind teaching works. In other words, what Dr. Holmes was saying is the creative process that the science of mind reveals is available to everyone. To find out how this thing called life, then, works, he studied philosophies, Christian mysticism, Buddhism, Christian science, and the metaphysical writers of his day, including my favorite thinker, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Dr. Holmes said, the science of mind is not a revelation of any individual, including me, rather the culmination of all individuals. Well, Dr. Holmes tapped the minds of many to eventually formulate our teaching, the science of mind. His approach to life was not that there's something wrong with people that they need that needs to be corrected, but rather that there's something right with people that they need to realize. Well, what is that something right? I usually, right at this point, use a Holmes quote, and I'm going to later, but I found this week through the email, isn't email wonderful, of one of our students who reminded me of a book that I read a long time ago by Alan Watts. The name of that book is The Taboo Against Knowing Who You Are. Well, the phrase that I'm going to use to discuss that something that's right with us is this phrase, God is the self of the world. God is the self of the world, and any time anyone in this world refers to the self, they're referring to God. Dr. Holmes, then, didn't create a teaching of reformation. He created a teaching of revelation. And that's what appealed to me and got me in this science, and I have a feeling that's what appeals to you too. A religion that tells us there's nothing wrong with us, so we can get on with the business of living. Think about it. If you think there's something wrong with you, if you think you're flawed by nature, you will probably spend a lifetime trying to get unflawed, trying to get right with the universe or with God or with something. Well, it didn't just tell us that we weren't flawed, this teaching. It tells us that we're one with the creative power that we've come to call God. Now, last week we answered two important questions then. Who am I and why do I exist? We answered the question, who am I, by addressing what Dr. Holmes calls the thing itself. Strange words for a religion to use, but I like it because instead of calling it God, which some people hesitate in calling it, or mind or spirit or anything, he just says, we're dealing with something. Let's just call it the thing itself. Well, Alan Watts referred to this question, who am I, by saying the self of the world is God. We could say the self of the world is this thing itself to which we all look to try to understand what place it has in our lives and what place we have in its life. Well, I've always liked the Dr. Holmes statement, and here's where I'm talking about a quote from Holmes when he says, "Spirit put the stamp of individuality upon itself and called it you." I'll repeat that. Spirit put the stamp of individuality upon itself and called it you. You and I then individualize spirit. And what I have come to think of as the initiating power of the universe. That's what I call it. Well, where exactly is this initiating power? In the most logical place it could possibly be. No, not in the stars, Brutus, or in any one person or any one religion, but rather in the conscious minds of every person who ever lived, whoever will live. We went on to answer the question, excuse me, why do I exist? By saying, if I am the initiating power of the universe, if I'm the initiating power of the universe or part of that initiating power, then I exist to initiate experiences in my life that please me. So we're not here to please God, because God is not a person that can be affected in one way or another by what we do or don't do. What a myopic view of God to think that God could be impressed by our prayers or God could be turned off by something we do. This is anthropomorphizing God and thinking of God as a person, because we might be turned off by something someone says or does, but not God. Thou, God, seest me perfect at all times. Well, God is the life force then that allows us to use its power in any way we choose. And that's why we're here, to choose. Dr. Holmes used to open his radio show by these words: there's a power for good in the universe and you can use it. How do we use it? We use it every moment of every day by choosing what we're going to think about. What have you chosen to think about? Are you still thinking about this? Well, that's all right. That's your choice. And you have a right to that choice. And no religion, no person, including me, has a right to say, well, or do I? I guess I have a right. I could choose to say you're wrong. But you can choose back to me and say, you're wrong that I'm wrong. I'm right being choosing. Whatever that means. The point simply is, we spend God's power by choosing what we're going to think about. Why? Because what we think about, ultimately, we experience. We know that Dr. Holmes knew that everyone's attracted to the concept of power, aren't they? But how wonderful it is to realize that the power of the universe resides within you, resides within me, where? In our conscious minds. If it weren't for this power, life would stop being life at the universal level, and life would stop being life at the individual level. And the soul would never be satisfied. Because that's what really every person, consciously or unconsciously, yearns for: an identity of the self that inspires rather than depresses. I was talking to a young lady before the service who maybe hadn't been to the Science of Mind for some years. And she said, you know, I am addressing the continual remembrance of a belief in a punishing and rewarding God. And I could identify with that, because I can remember thinking for many years, even after I got into this science, yes, I was accepting on one hand the concept, of a perfect God within, but I was also had lingering thoughts of a God that was setting out to ruin my day, practically every day of my life, because of something I had done in 1958. Or 59, I'm not sure which. Because I did bad things in both of those years. Thank God I'm alive, huh? Well, it's hard to get on with the business of living if we're dragging a depressing image of ourselves around with us. I'll repeat that. It's hard to get on with the business of living, of thriving, of doing what we want to do, accomplishing what we want to accomplish, which may include a healthy image of ourselves, if we're dragging around an unhealthy image of ourselves. The greatest distraction in life is there's something wrong with me. Now you're here this morning to hear a great truth, and it's so simple and disarming you may throw it aside thinking, well, it's a little too simple for me. But you heard it here, and you'll hear it in every religious science church in the world. There is nothing wrong with you. Say it with me, but put me in there. There is nothing wrong with me. I like this, don't you? So do it with me. There is nothing wrong with me. Let's go on the road with this. I can see us on Broadway in a show called Who Cares? Well, that's really what we have to do, isn't it? There's nothing wrong with you. There is something right with you, but it's not just for you to declare that it's true. You have to know why. See, I'm tuning in on Dr. Holmes' statement. Just saying that it's true and that there's nothing wrong with you is fine, and it's important because it's part of your self-talk regime. But what really puts a foundation under this statement and allows it to be your actual experience is to know why. Well, because you're the self of God. You know, this teaching really is rather simple. And it can be reduced to that simple concept, I am that I am. The thing that stands up before all that exists and says, I am, and that thing is God. Well, you're that thing. I am that I am. Dr. Holmes was concerned about how things worked, the way they worked, and that included the principle of life. Creative principles that have a beginning, middle, and end. And last week we started with the beginning, the thing itself. The initiating power of the universe, or what I've called conscious mind, or indeed the initiating power of the universe. Conscious mind initiates action every time it thinks, every time it feels. In short, every time it chooses to entertain an idea. Excuse me. Now, where do these choices go after they leave our conscious awareness? Well, they go to another place in mind, a place that exists to give the choice a form. For what good is a choice that just remains a choice? The choice has to outpicture itself, otherwise why have them? Well, it goes to subconscious mind. The form that the choices take is determined by the kind of choices. For instance, if I choose to think about what I think is wrong with me, then whether or not it is wrong with me, I'm actually giving form to what I think is wrong with me. See, that's the main trouble about dragging around a faulty image of yourself. Whether that image is true or not is not the issue. There's something in you will accept it as true automatically and will create an experience equal to that belief. That's why affirming God as the self of the world is only as good as it is followed by saying, God is the self of me. Another good affirmation. Say it with me. God is the self of me. Again, God is the self of me. Show and tell this morning, isn't it? Well, I think that's true. But we're going to go on to prove that it's true, to get the why and how of it. When he writes about subjective mind, Dr. Holmes reminds us that he's not talking about two minds. He's talking about two aspects of the one thing we call mind. Those two aspects are conscious and subconscious, or he calls it conscious and subjective. Why does he call it subjective instead of subconscious? Well, because that place in mind is subject to what conscious mind has initiated. Subjective mind has no intention of its own. It accepts what conscious mind has impressed upon it and transforms it into an experience. Now, this is climbing into the scientific aspect of religious science. I'll repeat it. Subconscious mind accepts what conscious mind has impressed upon it and transforms it into an experience. Not because we want it to, but because such is the nature of mind, such is the nature of life. Subjective mind then functions primarily as an impersonal transformer, transforming mental stuff into experiences. Now that's true of me and it's true of you, but remember, we're finding out the how and why of our teaching and how it works. Your mind then is made up of two components, an initiator and a transformer. And when we draw the circle on our board, we have the top here, the middle, and the bottom. We say the top is conscious mind, subjective mind, and then the experience. And conscious mind, what it thinks, moves into that subjective medium and ends up being an experience. Now, these two aspects of mind, and that's what we call consciousness, conscious and subjective mind, are inseparably linked. One is dependent on the other. So connected are these two components of mind, conscious and subjective or subconscious, that we can say mind, the totality of mind, creates experiences out of what it does to itself. Or we can make it very personal. I create by means of what I do to myself. I create by means of what my thought does to my mind. Well, your mind is like a computer, and the analogies are endless. The computer is impersonal, so is subjective mind. And it is neither for nor against anything. It's neither for nor against success. It is for whatever you program into it. And it doesn't make any difference to subjective mind. That aspect in your mind which accepts what you're thinking into it is for or against nothing. Sort of like garbage in, garbage out. Or let us say destructive stuff in, destructive stuff out. Or constructive stuff in, constructive stuff out. Actually, the computer is like subjective mind in that it doesn't relate to input as constructive or destructive. It's just input. That's why I say it's impersonal. It doesn't have a vested interest in the outcome that it gives to you in one way or another. No investment to what it's responding to. It just processes whatever you, the initiator, gives it. Now think about it. That's you. I'm describing you. The way you work. You have something in your mind, conscious mind, that conceives of an idea, and something also in your mind, the other aspect of mind, that impersonally accepts whatever you've given it and makes it your experience. That's what makes you creative. When you consciously embody an idea, not just glance at an idea, but embody it, that idea becomes a part of your mind. And what becomes a part of your mind eventually becomes a part of your experience. That's why we have to look at what we're thinking about all the time. There's a part of you that accepts ideas without question and moves them into your experience. Now, to some people, that's a little scary. That without my acceptance, without my conscious approval of it or not, there's a part of me that accepts and approves of everything that I'm thinking. And it assumes that I want an experience equal to it. Whether it's prosperity or poverty, whether it's thoughts of happiness or depression, whether it's love or indifference, whether it's success or failure. One of our fine students, I won't tell you her name because it's not important to her. Her name is important, but to this talk it isn't. But she gave me a wonderful, perfect example of the way she's using this science to only ingest or absorb what she wants. She says she was looking at her telephone book with all her numbers in it one day, and she came across the name and telephone number. Actually, it was two numbers. You know how we always give a number and then our cell phone number. If I'm not there, call this one. I've gone to just calling a cell phone number immediately because they're probably not home anyway. They're working like me. Well, anyway, she said she ran across the number of a doctor she had just gone through an experience with, and it was a good experience. In other words, she was led to have an operation that did her very well, and she's doing wonderfully. And whereas the doctor told her at the end of this experience, you know, this phenomenon could very well occur in the next year. She says that was 5 years ago. So the doctor was wrong, but something happened in her mind when she opened and saw this doctor's name and the number next to it. And she says, you know what I did? And I guarantee you I'm going to use this as an example probably the rest of my career. She took one of those bottles of whiteout, and she whited out the name, and she whited out the number. That's called whiteout religious science. And I love it. Not because, and I would never tell my students, now when you go home, you white out everything in your phone book that you don't want to accept. I wouldn't say, because that's not the issue. The issue is take charge. Since your mind is creating your experience, what you do with your stuff, the stuff of your life, is important. To her, it was important to be done with this doctor and everything that had to do with the doctor. And I celebrate her decision to do so. When your conscious mind wipes out what you don't want your subjective mind to create for you, your subjective mind can no longer work on making it your experience. You got to do your own version of whiting out what you no longer want. And I like white out because it stays there forever. It never goes away. And it's strong. This is not a commercial. By the way, you know who created white out? A religious science, member of a religious science church. That's true. Emily White. No, I don't know her name. You see, that's why we must be mindful of what we allow ourselves to think about, what we allow ourselves to accept. Hold any idea that you deem important loosely in your own mind. Not like this, I gotta have this, but hold it loosely. You're dealing with a creative process that wants you to experience the sum result of what's going on in your mind. You don't have to beg it to. It's its great pleasure to give you the kingdom. Mind can be possessed by thinking thoughts that represent lack and limitation or opulence and wonderful. For instance, we can let ourselves be preoccupied and possessed by ideas of loss. And all we think about is who we have lost and what we have lost and how bad we feel about it. We can be possessed by the idea of being cheated or being overlooked. What we possess in our mind, we create in our experience. We've all had times when we've let ourselves be possessed by an idea that we wouldn't let go of. But finally, we did let go of it. We've got to remember what caused us to let go of it and realize that at the center of whatever that was, we chose to let go of what we no longer wanted. Now that's the New Year promise I make myself, to be aware of what no longer serves any purpose of my life in my life and let it go, to choose to let it go. Sometimes I think the subjective mind is like a creative listener, listening to the ideas that we're constantly impressing upon ourselves and transforming them into our experience. Subjective mind doesn't discriminate between good and bad, and it doesn't respond to you by either punishing you or rewarding you. It simply creates inevitable consequences. Remember, it's impersonal. It also does not judge. It passes no judgment on you, the thinker, or your thoughts. And like your computer, it never gets bored with your input. It doesn't hold you to the past. It doesn't think that you should do better. It doesn't think that you should have more. Or it doesn't think that you're worth more than you have. It doesn't make any of those considerations. That's something in you and something in me. That's the business of our conscious mind, to say, I'm worth more than I'm experiencing. I'm worth more than I'm charging. I refuse to hold on to the past, and things can be better in my life. Your subjective, the aspect of your mind called subjective, doesn't make these assessments because it's impersonal. It's receptive to what you give it. That's the ballywick of your conscious mind. No one knows why subjective mind does what it does or how it does it. All we know is why it exists. It exists to be a part of the creative process in the individual, a process that is not bound to precedent. Think of it. You may have people in your life that know a little bit about you, maybe too much about you. And they may not throw it up in your face, but every time you see them, you think to yourself, oh God, she knows or he knows. Well, subjective mind, the most important aspect of mind, the creative part of your mind, doesn't register opinions about your past. So the most important person in the world, you have a part of your own mind which doesn't hold you to the past. That should thrill you. Why? Because that's the most important aspect of your livingness, your own mind. A process then that is not bound to precedent, not bound to what has come before. It doesn't say stop thinking those certain thoughts. You know they're not good for you. And it doesn't say you should start thinking these thoughts because you know they're healthier. Again, that's the business of your conscious mind. And when you consciously embrace these ideas, they automatically, you don't have to force them into some aspect of your mind that you're not aware of, they automatically fall into the subjective medium of your mind, which sets out immediately to give them form, to make them your experience. Our problems have their root, in my belief, in the way we talk to ourselves, our self-talk. I'm a particular fan of Leonardo da Vinci. In fact, I wrote my thesis for in my ministerial year on Da Vinci. And I doubt if he talked to himself in terms of limitation. You know what he was. He was a painter, a sculptor, an architect, an engineer, a stage designer, an anatomist, an inventor, a mathematician, a philosopher. My God, he accomplished so much. And for the most part, he was brilliant at every one of these things. But, you know, how did he think? What did he talk? What did he say when he talked to himself? I don't really know, but I know one thing he said. If this eternal form appears to you marvelously constructed, remember that it's nothing in comparison with the soul that constructed it. Or that indeed, because that indeed is a thing divine. Well, that's you, your mind. Your mind is what constructs your experience. Da Vinci kept learning and applying what he was learning to what he was interested in. More important than a particular building was the study of construction itself. More important than a scientific specific masterpiece was the study of color and light and shade. More important than the workings of a particular machine was the working of mechanics itself. Well, I'm here to tell you that more important than what you're trying to demonstrate right now is the principle in you that allows you to demonstrate. There is someone listening to your self-talk this very minute who has a great interest in you. And that someone assumes that you want to have an experience equal to what you're telling yourself. And that someone is you. It is you. If you keep telling yourself that you don't have what it takes, that you missed the boat, or that you don't have much time, much talent, much energy, much incentive, or support to do what you want to do, then you don't. Because that's your self-talk. And your life will be built on the way you talk to yourself, not what you say here. My life isn't built on what I say here, primarily because this is only 1 hour a week. You see, I'm with myself all hours of every week. And it's what I say to myself privately, what I really believe that counts, not what I say. Now, I try to make what I say also what I believe, but I know the ultimate concept is what I carry around with me in my mind and the way I talk to myself all the time. If any of these ideas speak to you, then they speak to you because you've chosen them. You've chosen to think of yourself as not having the right talent, the time, the energy, and so forth. Change your self-talk. Be aware of it and change it. Subjective mind acts on what you say is. If you say these things is or are, and you hear yourself talk that way, well, change it. Start saying, the only support I need is my own, and I have it. Say that with me. The only support I need is my own, and I have it. Holmes says the power that works for us, the power works for us by working through us and is us always. You see, you can't stop initiating experience, which means you can't stop being creative. as we approach, then wanting to demonstrate a particular experience, approach it the Da Vinci way. Yes, experiences are the results of what goes on in our minds. The experience we desire is important. But more important is our understanding of the creative process that makes it all possible. That's what we want to approach. That's what we're doing this whole month. We started last week with the basics by quoting Dr. Holmes when he said, "There's a depth and meaning to your own being. And if you can understand it and discover it, it'll answer all your questions." This morning, my friends, we've taken just another step in discovering and knowing how this thing called life works, how this thing called the self works. I trust that you're going to use it to your best ability to watch what you're thinking this week and make sure that your self-talk is constructive. Don't give a hoot about anyone in your life, whether they support you or not, or whether they notice what you're doing or not. Just ask yourself, am I noticing what I'm doing? Am I noticing the way I talk to myself? And am I talking to myself in a way that is so supportive that I feel good about being who I am morning, noon, and night, every day of the week, every week of the year? Do you want to do that? Yeah. I'll do it with you, and so it is. Yes.